going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, Deus Ex Machina has arrived, and with it, another edition of WTF Prime Time!
No memory error this time, sweet. I am here today as Vangelis with my associate Gog Dog.
Hello.
As well as our associate Aaron.
Yes, yes.
And our associate Omegas Prime.
Thank you.
No problem. Don't be prejudiced against those who stutter. Didn't you see King's Speech? Feel bad now.
Paw Bear.
So, before we start, I just want to also throw out there, just in case anyone's as utterly misinformed as I apparently was, this is actually the last episode of Transformers Prime for a couple weeks. The show's going to be on hiatus for new episodes until early April. The next 3 weeks, I believe, are reruns. So, we'll also be having a little bit of a prime time vacation, I suppose. Unless, like, we want to talk about Masters and Students again. I don't know why I was completely unaware of it, but credit where credit's due. After I watched the episode and started to ramble about it on Twitter, Jazz Santi and Lady Rec were talking and like, yeah, it sucks that we gotta wait 3 weeks. And I was like, hey guys, what are you talking about? And they were all like, you stupid idiot, don't you know? Ugh. So, show's taking a little bit of a break. And it also debuted some new characters, so I thought maybe we could start by talking about them. And speaking of being misinformed, I flipped out when I was looking at the voice credits and I saw that Breakdown was played by Adam Baldwin. And immediately...
Yes.
Hang on, let me see who it was. I think it was Distant Fred on Twitter was like, yeah, we know. They said that in a press release, like, months ago. Yeah, it's Distant Fred. So I was like, oh... I didn't know that.
Goldfish memory. Come on.
apparently the Baldwin announcement was buried in larger press releases. So Adam Baldwin should not have been a surprise, but it was a massive surprise to me because he has one of those voices where I don't know it's him until I see it in the credits, and then I can hear it right away.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe we could start by talking about their version of Breakdown, who he's got a red face. That was actually a neat little bit of throwback. He's kind of got the... I thought he kind of had a War for Cybertron-ish color scheme. Not like the same balance of colors, but it gave me the same feeling. But I kind of enjoyed how he was played. I like his robot mode. I like his vehicle mode. Hope there's a toy. He's got a hammer. And from what we could see, he's yet another character that Bulkhead has some history with. Bulkhead got around. He knows dudes.
Yeah.
And... Yeah, I mean, he didn't do too much in the episode, but I really enjoyed the effectiveness they showed us. I really liked his relationship with his working associate. I am into Breakdown. Aaron, what about you?
As far as Adam Baldwin as the voice, my wife noticed that right off the bat. She was sitting there doing something on Facebook, and she's like, "Is that Jane? is that Jane?" I'm like, what are you talking about, Jane? You know, Jane. I'm like, that's Adam Baldwin. Yeah, Jane. Oh, yes, yes. Other character that he's played also would have taken the NSA agent on Chuck or any other role that he has. He has a real name. But no, that was great seeing Breakdown as a big, like, Range Rover type of four-wheel drive vehicle. But yeah, played it very well and played it to, I don't know, it's the whole thing. Did they play it well to the voice, or did they just pick a good voice for what was on the script or what? But the kind of gruff, what was the line that he had? Oh, you got a pet, let's see if it'll play catch before throwing something at him.
Yeah.
That is totally a line that Adam Baldwin delivers quite well in any of the, like, characterizations that he's had. So, bravo.
Very, very well cast. I hope that the characters return, because that's a voice where I'd love to see it get some legwork. Kind of like with Clancy Brown's voice, kind of like with a lot of the character voices in the show. Yeah. I want them to get time to get their legs out, stretch out a bit, grow, etc. Gog, what about you? How'd you take Breakdown? Because I know you were quite a fan of War for Cybertron Breakdown, and this doesn't seem to be the same character in any way, but.
I was wondering where you were going with that.
I mean, like you said, he's got a breakdown ass head sculpt or color scheme. I mean, I was kind of surprised that they did that, and I liked it. It was, I don't know, it was like one of those neat things where they don't have to reference another character, but when they do something like that, it's, I get a kick out of it. And I think Breakdown's design lends himself to toy translation much better than some of the other Prime characters we've seen so far. Mm-hmm. And given the fact of that they've made a lot of designs that you wouldn't think would translate very well to toys, as we've seen, they've done a much better job than a lot of us expected, I think. Especially with the likes of RC, I think that a Breakdown toy is going to look really good. yeah, we haven't really seen a lot of him. We saw more of, was it Knockout?
Yeah, Knockout.
Yeah.
More so than Breakdown, really. The part where he did the, let's see if she can play catch. Like, everyone knew that it wasn't going to hit her, but geez, that thing got close.
Yeah.
I just got a kick out of that. Like, I was like, where are you, Bulkhead? Like, it's in slow motion in my head. Like, where are you?
Are you sure it wasn't the big hope of the whole fandom is please hit?
At this point, it's the hope of everyone else. I think we've all kind of warmed up to her too.
I think we've warmed up to Miko, but I've seen a lot of similar opinions online. It seems like other people are as well. So, which I'm glad. I don't want characters that I hate. Not like Decepticons where the writers are doing their job if you hate them because you just love to hate them, but characters that you really wish would just go away and you'd never see them again.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we are getting away from that. Now all they need to do is find some way to Miracle Raph.
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I was like, again, with this episode, I was like, well, at least Raph is doing something logical. But again, he's kind of just chilling out, and then they're like, hey, we need to know something. He's like, I know how to use Google. Like, all right, Raph, use Google. It's like, okay, can I come along?
See, sure. Now that the Autobots still
haven't figured out Google goggles yet, but Raph, good thing they got Raph.
but back to Breakdown. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy that he didn't die.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, when he got that stick in his chest and was getting electrocuted, I was like, are you kidding me? You can't do this. And then when he got back up, I was like, oh, thank God. Like,
yeah.
we can't go down this road every week now.
But it's
the mood that they've set up in this show and the precedent of characters dying on their first appearance in this show. When I see stuff like that happen, you don't know. Like, he's voiced by a celebrity.
They almost killed him. Like, they almost nailed him with the Energon siphon. He got out of the way, and then we got our token death for the episode from an Erraticon.
Yeah, and I kind of winced there a little bit, too. I was like, oh, what? And then we got stabbed, and there were several moments where I thought, well, I mean, and the fact that they introduced two new Decepticons had me thinking like, well, maybe only one of them is going to survive. So that may be a credit to the writers where because in most cartoon series, you know, no one's going to die. Like when bad things happen, you know that they're going to pull out at the last minute. This show, you got no idea.
Yeah.
And while a lot of us were kind of disappointed, like, man, there's been a lot of characters die for a show with such a small cast, but it does kind of set the mood and the precedent for anyone at any time can die in this show. I mean, I would assume that the main Soundwave, Starscream, Bulkhead, Bumblebee, Ratchet, the core group, it probably isn't going anywhere for at least the first season, but I mean, outside of that, you really don't know, and I guess that's kind of a good thing because you can't take anything for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Omegas, how do you feel about Breakdown?
I quite enjoyed what little we got to see of him. I'm in the same mindset of, oh my god, I've heard of his voice actor. He's not going to last very long. So, I kind of like the dynamic he had going. I almost felt like, okay, this is what Ransack and Crumble Zone would have been like if they were competent.
That was actually one of my first thoughts.
Yeah.
I mean, even down to the smart one being red.
Yeah. But, you know, Breakdown wasn't a slouch either. I mean, he was pulling in a decent bit of strategy amongst all this.
Mm.
And I actually do like the direction they went in. Because the second you hear a G1 name, you instantly think, well, you know, we're gonna see that white sports car again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like the direction of, well, they've gone with the dark blue instead of the white, which really fits this big bruiser Decepticon a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And really worked a lot better in the episode, just with all the dark tones, everything taking place at night.
Yeah, I think if he was a white vehicle, I don't know, like also just as a companion vehicle to the red car that is Knockout, I think that the red and the blue, they're both very striking, characterful colors, so having a duo that is red and blue really kind of, I think, it feels a little bit more unique than having one of them be blanched out.
Right.
I also want to throw out there, though, I'm really happy also that he wasn't a Stunticon maybe he will be one, but he wasn't overtly a Stunticon, because immediately I saw a discussion thread going like, so do you think they're going to bring in the other Stunticons and make them team up with Breakdown? I was kind of like, I hope not.
Oh, boy.
He's part of right now.
I think we should be over this at this point. There are some, like, yeah. Okay, now we have a new Breakdown. We've agreed that Swindle can be on his own. We don't need a horde of Combaticons coming in.
Yeah, yeah, we should just be happy that he has a red face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. He didn't need one.
His head looks right. Be happy.
Oh, I mean, I think like Derek made a good point. I forgot if this was during the recording or not, but he made a good point that, like, you know, a lot of combiner characters, when they show up, it tends to just be a case of they show up and people go like, oh, when are the other ones going to show up so they can turn into the big guy? And it's kind of like, it's cool to just make them their own characters.
That character is there to be a leg.
Yeah, yeah. Make them more than a limb.
Yeah, because they are original G1 characters, but because they were, you know, they were around to form a giant robot, so they didn't really get fleshed out like they really needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives so much leeway, and especially if you want to homage Decepticons, you really don't have a lot of fleshed out ones to pick from, because you go from season 2 where they're all combiners, and season 3 where half the army is sweeps.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little bit eager to move on, only because we're going to be moving on to Knockout. Yeah, Breakdown, again, just like War for Cybertron, Breakdown gets to be a cool singular entity rather than part of a team. Although he is part of a team, and he's duoed up with Knockout, who is absolutely fabulous. Knockout, his voice actor, actually, I went looking up his work. His voice actor has quite a bit of a resume. He even was on the Transformers Armada game. And apparently he's a big time voice actor in Fairly Odd Parents. He's done a whole bunch of voices in shows I haven't watched, is the thing. Fairly Odd Parents, I believe he was J. Jonah Jameson in Spectacular Spider-Man. I always forget what his name is too, because I don't know him that well. It starts with an N. ND, something like that. But, man, Knockout shows up and just delivers these opening couple lines. I was just like, all right, you're my new favorite Decepticon who isn't Soundwave. He just walks in, he's like, it was a long drive, I'm still picking bugs out of my grill. And I was like, okay, that's pretty awesome. And then, you know, that follow-up when Starscream's coming down on him for being an automobile, and he's just like, I like how I look. I was like, all right, I love this guy.
kind of Traxy in that, isn't he?
Well, someone sent me a tweet saying, like, so he's basically an evil Trax. And I was kind of like, you know, I don't know. Because we don't know to what degree he is a bodywork engineer. Like, is he a mm-hmm. medic, or is he just a physical engineer? I don't want to railroad him into just being evil Trax. I kind of just like the idea of a suave and incredibly vain villain, because I don't know, I find whenever I think of vain Transformers, it tends to come down to, you know, Autobots or hero characters like Trax, or like Sideburn when he turns red. This guy was just great. His design was also marvelous. Some people questioned this, but I actually agreed when some people said it looks like he might be taking one or two cues from Revenge of the Fallen Knockout, the motorcycle. And I was kind of like, you know, I can kind of see it in where the pieces of the hood are on his chest and having the two wheels as a backpack. It is a stretch of a comparison, but I can kind of see it if that was intentional. One thing pointed out to me by Razorsaw on Twitter, which actually had me rewatching the episode, and at first I was like, I'm not seeing this. And then by the end, when they were in Greece and he was moving a bit faster, I could see it. The wheels on his back were actually freewheeling on their axles.
So, like when he gets out of the way of the Energon harvester beam, the wheels are basically spinning when he moves, in time with his momentum. I didn't notice that at first, and it was actually really well done. Like, there was full on physics going on there. And I was like, that's pretty cool. He's got a cool weapon. He knows how to use it. He basically has a cattle prod. And, I also just loved his finishing line when the dynamic between him and Breakdown is marvelous, where Breakdown's like, fight, is like, drive. And they just take off. And I was like, that, like, you could tell those two have been working together for quite some time. And I really liked that they were a duo and they weren't an obvious duo. They weren't like, oh, here's the lackey and the brains, or here's the two guys who are completely alike. It's like, no, here's the really vain engineer and here's the big muscled dude who, for whatever reason, works with this guy as, and it was more, it felt more like they were kind of equals, even though clearly, Breakdown kind of deferred to, Knockout's decisions. I didn't feel like it was a case of Knockout's the boss, Breakdown's the idiot who's told what to do. And that makes me really want to see some more episodes with those two. And in the course of this episode alone, I was just sold on them. I was like, I want those two guys on my desk right now. Like, those are characters who have got to the point. Those two characters are, at least Knockout is on the same vein now as Soundwave to me, where it's like, even if the toy sucks, I'll buy it because I want a representation of the character. I am so unbelievably into how Knockout was done. I don't know why it clicked with me so much, but I was like grinning like mad during the whole episode. That this character, like, it's one of those characters where, especially in Prime, given how dark a tone the series has, to have this almost just cartoonishly vain Decepticon show up picking dead bugs out of his, you know, out of his chest and just going like, yeah, I like how I look with these radials. And I was like, okay, stay on the show. And much like Breakdown, I was like, please don't kill this guy off before this episode's over. What order shall we do? Gog, how do you feel about Knockout?
Knockout was the star of this episode, I think, for me. I didn't think about that before, but Evil Trax, I think that's, I mean, it might not sum him up perfectly, but that's a very good descriptor, and I think that sums him up pretty well, actually.
I'm hoping there's more to him than that, but it is, from what we've seen so far, a pretty good way to sum him up.
Yeah. And I loved his conversation with Starscream too, where Starscream's like, ugh, one of you who doesn't, you could be flying.
And yeah.
We don't really get that a lot, because most Transformers, the reason why the way they are, just design mode, is just because, well, this is the toy that we're gonna make. We need some jets, we need some cars, we need this and that. And so it was cool to see a character that was designed obviously before a toy was even conceptualized for him, and just giving, but actually fleshing out a fictional reason, like, well, yeah, if you could choose a mode that would fly, why wouldn't you? Like, we saw in Masters and Students, we saw Skyquake. He wanted the jet because he had aerial superiority. And Knockout doesn't care about that. He's a car because that's what he wants to be. And even against the tactical wishes of his team, and not only that, but apparently social status, like, Starscream is just disgusted at the mode that he chose.
You're one of
those. One of those. one of you people.
Yeah.
You're like, oh god, a goth kid. Ugh, one of those.
But I just thought that was a neat little touch, because we don't really get that. It's like, well, cars are cars, jets are jets, and for them to bring it up was, I don't know, it kind of resonated with me a bit. Mm-hmm. But Knockout's cool. Again, I'm happy he survived the episode, and it's we, especially with an episode that debuted two characters. I mean, we haven't really, like you said, we don't really know enough about him yet to really to know him more than just the evil suave character. But I hope that these guys start showing up more on a regular basis, especially since the Decepticons are really lacking for characters. Yeah. I mean, we've only had two main Decepticon characters, and that's about it. So for them to flesh out the ranks a little more, I think is going to be good. And I mean, I'm cool with Wheeljack and what happened with him, because we know he's going to show back up at some point. But the Decepticon, I mean, the Autobot ranks have already kind of been fleshed out. The existing ones have their human partners, and then you have Ratchet and Prime, and we know they're not going anywhere for at least early on in this show. But Decepticons, it's just drones, and then the main two. So yeah. I hope that these guys start making regular appearances, because it's not going to be adding more characters than we can follow. It's going to be giving them someone to follow.
Yeah, so that's a good way to put it. Because yeah, like, especially with the stated intent that there will eventually be more Decepticons than Autobots to maintain that tension. I was really hoping. I was like, all right, I know you guys want to do it, so stop killing them when they show up, so we can actually do this and hit this tension that you want to do. And like, don't do this tension entirely through drones. Omegas, how do you feel about Knockout?
I, like you, was very much into this character. I had thought Evil Trax at first, but I think there's a little bit more to him than that. My notation on him reads casually sadistic.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, well, he's brought in as a specialist by Starscream, so he is something. I assume a Decepticon equivalent of a medic, and I do like how their medics seem to be more about learning how a body works to take it apart better rather than put it back together.
I've been wondering if, like, because I see people using the word medic all the time, and I'm wondering if it's like he's not a medic so much as he is just a surgeon. Because like medic implies different things to me than just, like, surgeon to me implies a different thing than a general medic.
He also seemed surprised when he saw Megatron, and he's like, well, I don't know how I'm going to be able to help you with this. Like, my job is to take things apart. So
right. But I do love that they got this across, like, yeah, he's got a giant cattle prod as a weapon. He's got an array of drills as a weapon. It's all stuff that's very slow, and I can imagine very painful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anesthetic.
Yeah.
Well, that, and like, I mean, he even has lines, like when Bulkhead, after he's thrown the Energon Harvester, he's all like, this one's just a glutton for punishment. I was like, dude.
Yeah.
Calm down, but don't calm down.
It's almost like he knows the scale. Okay, that's a 7.5, maybe 8.
Right. But the character itself, again, is really well crafted. I mean, much better than Breakdown. I mean, I am very eager to see this one again. Many, many times. Just, I love how casual he is about just about everything. Like, the scene just when the Bulkhead gets bailed out toward the end, and Breakdown, two words. One, Breakdown, fight. Knockout, drive.
Yeah.
Not even stressing it.
Yeah, so I really like that mostly through that exchange, in as little time as possible, they've really communicated just how long he and Breakdown have been teammates.
Yeah.
Like, or have been, not even teammates, just have been a duo, have been associates, you know? they've worked together for a while, they know how each other thinks, and they're like, all right, do we fight? It's like, no, we drive. It's like, all right, I know what you mean. We're out. And they just leave. I loved it.
Yeah.
Aaron, what about you? How do you take Knockout?
I don't know. About my last Knockout specific note there is, after Frank from Legal bites it due to the Energon Harvester, Knockout, because I like before Knockout was like, well, no. You know, the two of us brought you the Energon Harvester, and then Starscream takes out Frank from Legal, and the Knockout's like, oh yeah, those ancient Autobots had it right. You know, quick with that, that turnaround ass kiss when needed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, and that was another great way to build that character in that, no, look, we did it. Okay. It's not that important that we did it. Somebody else, it's okay. You know, it's, so he still kind of has that little bit of Starscream-ish, you know, where's my kudos, but then again, I don't want kudos if it involves losing my life, so.
Yeah.
You go ahead.
No worries, no worries.
Yeah.
There was one knockout thing I didn't bring up yet because I wasn't sure if anyone else wanted to, but I really loved that moment when he just drives up behind Optimus Prime. He just starts just commenting on Optimus Prime's, like, you know, rims. Vehicle mode. Yeah, his rims. And Optimus is just sitting there completely silent the entire time.
Yeah, what, don't you think that Optimus would have reacted, holy crap, talking car!
No, I think
wait a second.
I like to think that it was just Optimus trying like mad. He's like, no, we got a mission. Do not react unless we must. Ignore the red car telling me about my rims, and then when a missile comes, he's just like, all right, catch the missile. But I really liked that Knockout just kind of sidled up and just started playing mind games. He wasn't even attacking him. He's just chilling out there. He's like, hey, what you doing? Museum, huh? Oh, nice. Nice rim.
And he knows, he obviously knew who Prime was, so that dude's got some balls to just pull up on Prime. He had the element of surprise.
Yeah.
And he just pulls up next to him. He's like, you ready? Let's go. Yeah.
Well, they were on such alert, it almost strikes me that he was gaining more element of surprise by distracting Prime.
Well, yeah. he definitely, I'm pretty sure if you're going to cut in between the lines, that would have definitely caught Prime's attention enough to not have him notice Breakdown kind of sidling up with a missile launcher until the thing fired. But yeah, I mean, it's a good way to put it. What balls does he have to just drive up to the legendary Optimus Prime and just basically start lipping off at him? Yeah, Knockout. Good stuff. There was more to the episode, although to me it was the Knockout episode. The first most important topic I can think of bringing up would be, hey, guess what? Another ancient Cybertronian artifact on Earth.
Earth just collects that crap like nobody's business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ancient
Autobots just used us as a garbage dump.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really mind it, but I do. I always kind of get a bit of a chuckle, especially when the episode is called Deus Ex Machina. I'm almost like, is this like meta humor? But the Energon Harvester, for what little time it had with us in this episode. I thought it was pretty interesting. I liked the idea that it was kind of like this experimental technology where they're like, all right, this thing it's going to suck Energon out of anything. And then they're like, hey, what happens if I point it at my buddy here? Oh, God. Okay, let's seal this up. Let's put it somewhere and not tell anybody it's here. We'll just leave a cryptic picture. As a plot device, it was neat. I was rather expecting it to be blown up by the end of the episode. So I admit I was a little bit disappointed when it did happen because I was like, okay, well, that's no surprise. Although, if it did stick around, I think it would have been way too much of a game changer to have chilling out at the base. It was kind of like it was a classic plot device object, and it served its purpose. I don't feel like it was the greatest thing ever, but I'm not mad about it. But I figure it warranted a little bit of discussion. Aaron, how'd you feel about the Energon Harvester?
Pretty much. You know, what you ran through. It's amazing how anything ends up collected at Earth. And, the fact that that the ancient Cybertronians would have come in and then, like, doodled in a fresco to point out to somebody else where this harvester was. I kind of found that a contrivance to put Miko's homework in Greece in there too. You know, why not just have like a Excel worksheet of where you left stuff?
His frescoes look better.
Yeah. Yeah. And then going back to, Raph just being able to Google golden orb Greek god. Oh, look, there it is. This thing that was hidden on Earth.
Raph is a hacker. All right. He hacked Google.
Yeah.
And
he hacked Google.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, other than that, it's something that, you know, it was just the true MacGuffin of the episode, and that, you know, if anybody had this thing at the end, if it hadn't blown up, it would have been too much of a game changer. Because I assume still that the Autobots are having to get Energon one way or another. So, yeah, it would make the Autobots limitless, you know, air quotes, limitless Energon, or even just be a, you know, I don't care how noble Prime wants to be. If you have a weapon that you can just point at dude and dude stops fighting you, I think the Autobots would use it as well. Maybe with a little bit more, sorrow to it, or really have to, well, do we really need to do this? But at the same time, yeah, with some restraint. But at the same time, if you're shooting or stabbing whatever, I mean, how many drones have we seen go down due to other methods? You know, why not just suck the energon out of them? Yeah, it sucks and it's painful, but you know what? He's not getting back up and we have energon now.
Yeah.
It's kind of a rough way to look at Autobots. It's pragmatic like that, but at the same time, it's one of those oddball things. You know, how is killing him one way more noble than the other?
The warrior's code. I don't know. Gog, what about you? How'd you take the Energon Harvester?
Well, even if they don't plan on using it as a weapon, they've already established that there are several quote unquote veins, Energon veins hidden on the Earth. The Autobots need Energon just like the Decepticons do, so at the very least they could. I mean, they even have contacts in the government, like Fowler, so they could be like, all right, well, we need this Energon, we have a harvester, let's set up a date and time, and let's find a Energon vein, and let's harvest it, because we need it, and we need, apparently, in the state that it's in, apparently it's unusable for the most part, so,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there were reasons for them to keep it, but,
right.
I mean, but hey, Deus Ex Machina, right?
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, the whole, I didn't mind the part where Raph found it on Google. Like I said, as far as his hacking skills go, doing an image search is actually somewhat believable to me as far as, cause when you're good at doing an image search, you can usually find something and yeah, it was a little convenient or whatever I mean, compared to the stuff we've seen Raph do, please just have him be like the Google image searcher for the
Autobots. I'm going to hack the railroad.
Yeah, or the government satellite array in a matter of minutes. I mean, but we've gone on and on about Raph, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I understand. I understand completely if you'd have a problem with it, but this was that we've been getting toned back, so I am not. I'm not going to complain. But yeah, the whole Energon orb, I mean, I don't know if they actually based this off of something. Maybe there is a famous painting or something that has somebody holding something that's glowing and they based it off that. I honestly don't know. If they did, that would be kind of cool, I guess. But it still is a little bit hilarious of how... I mean, I don't know. I would think that Orsi and them would want to maybe distance themselves from... this that keeps happening over and over, but yeah. they're probably, in their defense, they're not the lead writers, so I doubt that we have no proof that this was even there.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, also, you need to have a reason for the episode to be happening other than the characters showing up, so.
Right.
You know. Oh, yeah. With
Transformers, with Transformers, it is kind of like, worst case, you can always say it's some Transformers technology. It's on Earth. They got it. Both guys want to get it. It'll blow up at the end.
But at least in this defense, it was a small tool that could be used for harm instead of, look, under this building, there is a weapon that could destroy our planet if we don't get to it fast enough. So in this case, it was, oh, look, it's a piece of mining equipment that's been repurposed for evil, kind of like in Dead Space.
Yeah.
So... I didn't mind it that much. It was kind of brutal how Starscream just...
And Erraticon was, like, choking by the end. He's going, he's going all like, oh, I was like, okay.
And it adds more to the debate of, are these guys sentient Cybertronians or not? Because if they are...
going off another line in the episode, I bet you that was the guy who suggested they put it to a vote.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, since one of the Decepticons democratic?
Since none of them seem to listen to Starscream all that much.
Yeah.
until he's sucking their blood out through their skin.
Look, we're going to go for a work stoppage unless you put Megatron on life support.
I was like, I was kind of amused by the idea that he was all like, you know, I'm going to get back at that bastard who put us to a vote.
Because he wouldn't listen to me.
See if Frank wants to be a union rep anymore, eh?
Yeah. Like, why do we keep getting called Frank? Omegas, how about you? How did you take the Energon Harvest Tour?
Man, I miss the days when Decepticons would build their own crap.
He's got to find the ancient stuff.
Don't they bring their own stuff anymore?
They bring giant lasers that are incredibly conspicuous.
Remember the days Megatron would just build this giant laser and steal someone's crystal to power it?
Oh, we're still,
you do your own legwork.
We're still waiting for Carbomia to show up in the show.
Oh yeah, that'll happen. the device itself, I mean, it's kind of a creepy idea to turn this piece of mining equipment into basically a soul stealer.
Well, I took it not even so much as a soul stealer, but like I said, literally, because they say they have Energon pumping through their veins. So it's like, imagine if all your blood was pulled out of your body through your pores.
That really was the first time I've really felt bad for an Erraticon. Just because just the way that scene played out with the chorus hitting as soon as his Energon started getting sucked out.
Yeah.
It was kind of horrifying.
On the bright side, you know, I think that, like, you could see it in Starscream's face. Again, kudos to the animation, where he kind of had this look in his eye where he's like, all right, now they're listening to me. This is what it's like. Okay. All I gotta do is kill a few of them.
That's all it takes. Work for Galvatron.
I'm actually really looking forward to an episode, if they do it, where, like, maybe the Erraticon episode. Again, we keep bringing up this Phantom Erraticon episode. But, like, where they just go, like, all right, listen, Starscream's kind of, like, due to Starscream, like, 15 of us have been killed over the last week. I think it's time that we go on strike and stage a revolt.
Jeez. At this point, I almost want some episode to come along where we get to see, like, the Prime version of Rekgar. He's just pulling around this bag full of just doomsday weapons and, you know, demonic pieces of equipment. Just like, and as soon as the first episode we find him in, he's just, oh, there's a hole in the bag. Uh-oh.
Yeah, Rekgar is responsible for all of our Deus Ex. That's my point I was going to bring up, was the Machina. So, Omega, since you are on the mic right now, have you got a point you'd like to bring up?
Oh, jeez. I should really be ready for this, because I never know.
I don't even need notes and I'm ready. I got it all in my head, because I'm a genius.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if this is a little bit more of a throwback to Cybertron, but it's nice to hear a little bit of Bulkhead's backstory.
Yeah,
he is an engineer and a builder before the war.
Yeah, and then when he said that, I was kind of like, "Oh, hey, animated, what's up?"
So it's nice of not just borrowing the design; it is kind of tweaking the backstory to work with a more serious Transformers universe, which I can definitely appreciate on this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm glad they keep to the root of the character.
Although I think it's kind of funny that, like, now there's been two episodes where it's been kind of like, oh, hey, Bulkhead, you seem to know this guy. He's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I knew him from before. And they're like, okay, what'd you used to do, Bulkhead? It's like, well, actually, I don't know if you knew this, but I used to be A at certain. So I'm like, Bulkhead just has, like, I like the idea that Bulkhead also just has this limitless backstory of, like, oh, I didn't tell you guys this, but,
God, there's a cartoon character that I can damn it, that's going to bug me all day now.
That's what I'm here for.
There's a cartoon character I should know, and that was his whole gimmick.
Oh, is he'd constantly have, like, a new piece of backstory that's pop up.
It's gonna bug the hell out of me.
That sounds familiar to me too. If it helps at all, I'll be bothered.
No, it doesn't help. Oh. I'm glad you are suffering with me. I do want to know how someone who's basically construction and demolition ends up meeting so many people on Cybertron.
Hey, you meet lots of people in construction. Ask Aaron.
Yeah. A lot of weirdos. I mean, weirdos. Yeah.
That was awkward. Dog, what about you? Do you have a point you'd like to bring up?
Hmm. I like how Fowler was called in to bail Miko out. And that's kind of that's kind of one of those things where, again, in fiction, it would be like, well, if these kids are with robots and they're getting in trouble, but they have a government contact in that's their ally and knows about this, then don't you think that they'd be able to help them? And sure enough, it works. So I like the idea that these kids can go on covert missions with the Autobots, and if they get caught, we'll just have Fowler bail him out. I mean, he is like a special secret government agent who can do whatever he wants, clandestine.
No, I just thought that bit was the perfect joke. In an episode called Deus Ex Machina, she's describing Deus Ex Machina to have a Deus Ex Machina happen for her.
Well, also,
Fowler coming in and solving her problems and taking care of everything.
I loved his entrance, too, because after the whole episode of them just getting his voicemail the entire time,
When
he finally shows up, you just hear this stomping. He kicks the door in. He's like, Special Agent Fowler, the girl's with me, your orb's back in place, goodbye. And he just, like, walks off with her, and I was like, I love this. He's not even explaining. There's no alibi. He's just like, I'm with the government, goodbye.
Well, with all the stuff he has to cover up, just bailing out a kid who got caught in a museum after hours he doesn't even bat an eye at that.
It was so cool.
I'm having to help cover up giant alien invasions, and there's also a faction at war that would like nothing more than to have all of us destroyed. And I'm having to balance that compared with there's actually allies that we need to maintain and make sure that they have what they need while maintaining their cover. And there's this girl. Let me go grab her amidst all this. So
their uncertainty and priority with get the dry cleaning.
Well, I love that the security guard at the museum didn't even get a word in. Fowler just walks in and just like walks all over.
He's a rent-a-cop.
Yeah.
He's you know, he probably makes good.
I was going to say, he's got to be about the worst one, too. I mean, how inept is this guy? Find one person in the hall, and that must be what the whole building shaking and stuff going on outside
shaking,
is.
Come on, little girl. 800-pound artifact gone.
And then
go ahead.
Sit there and have this guard just keep leaning on her for this horrid heist of, you know, okay, tell me what happened. Why don't you call someone? And maybe... Okay, if you got someone,
how long were the police on the way? Because he said the police are on the way constantly.
Yeah, because it was 6 in the morning when Fowler popped in, or 15 till 6.
Yeah, sunrise happened at some point between...
It was probably a shift change. I mean, if there was an actual... Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends on if he had reported as a robbery, but if he just reported like, I found this girl around here, like, the cops aren't going to respond to that, like, as an emergency, but...
He was already plugging her about, okay, tell me about what your accomplices did, or something like that. I mean, he knows that something's gone missing. Why isn't he... I don't know. That just was like...
Fowler effect.
It was a story contrivance,
I thought it kind of all got legitimized just by, like, the reason why I loved Fowler's entrance and his just complete dismissal of this security guard without letting him get a word in is it was just like, I love that Fowler, once you summon him, he's just this force of nature. And, like, so when he's dealing with Decepticons, he's flying around in his business suit in an experimental military jet or a helicopter or something. When he deals with a rent-a-cop, he doesn't even let the guy speak. He's just like... just walks in, yells at him, walks off. That's it. And then when he gets outside, I was thinking like, oh, here it comes. He's going to give some kind of moral message to the girl. No, he's just like, all right, get out. I got stuff to do. I'm Agent Fowler. I've really warmed up to Fowler because they're really playing him straight faced, just the way that he goes about his business. And it's I don't know. There's something about it I really enjoy.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're not like. I think we were kind of worried in the beginning that they were going to kind of portray him as the. As a bit of an antagonist, in a way.
Yeah,
and I'm so glad that they're not going down that route. Like he is, an ally of theirs. Yeah, he's a little grumpy. He's gonna stick up his butt sometimes, but he is on their side. He is a member of their team. Mm-hmm. When they need favors, they call him and he comes through. And I like that. They're not pulling teeth every time they deal with this guy. And they could have easily gone down that route because it would have been so easy. Like, well, we need tension. Where are we going to find it?
Fowler.
Let's have Fowler just be like, no, he's a good guy, and he has his own personality, and that it's working out well so far, I think.
It's what I like in a grumpy character like that, where he's a grumpy guy, he's not nice to deal with, but then when you do have him on your side, you have a grumpy dude who's not nice to deal with that you're going to aim at other people, and he's the grumpy guy that they have to deal with. And I like that he's equal to everyone. Like, you know, he's grumpy at the Autobots, then he's grumpy at the security guard. Like, he's not like going like, hey, Mr. Security Guard, let me deal with this. Like, nice. He's like, give me the girl. Okay, bye. So I really enjoyed that quite a bit. I also want to know what he does for intensive training weekends.
Yeah, well, then the thing that gets me is, okay, just his whole voicemail is funny. Announce that you're on the super secret mission rather than just a nondescript, you know, hi, you've reached the voicemail box of phone number 712-555.
Intensive training mission.
Yeah, right in now. Case somebody accidentally dials the wrong number, or forbid even knows that you're an agent, now you're saying, hey, I'm off for a while. Again, kids show contrivance, but it's like, why not say you've reached Agent Fowler's phone?
Because he's Agent Fowler. He's yeah. Going to rub it in your face. He's like, not only have you reached the phone of Agent Fowler, I'm doing secret things that if I told you about them, I'd have to kill you. So I just want you to know I'm doing
I'm flying
them.
The super secret, top secret, secret jet with a three-piece suit on and no helmet.
And by the way, I'm back on Tuesday.
Yeah. and why don't the Autobots have like a second contact?
You don't need a second contact when you got Fowler.
In case Fowler is on crapper, call Admiral Nimitz.
Admiral Nimitz is a punk.
Fowler doesn't go to the bathroom. Because that would then require taking the suit off.
They have to render a second contact, and that's not going to happen. I mean, we got the top of a teacher's head and a student in this one, okay?
A whole yeah. student?
That was hardcore.
I was pumped by that student. I was like, oh my god! Face.
I was, and then when she's like, my teacher's coming, I'm like, oh, snap, we're going to get a teacher too. No, we didn't.
Yeah.
Just would have been the top of the head floating along.
Always carrying a newspaper. I entirely forgot who I asked for that point.
That was TJ.
All right. And I asked
her. Oh, no, that was me.
That was you.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whoever.
I asked Omegas, I asked you, so now I got to ask Aaron.
Yeah.
Right?
All right. I like how they just decide to use the kids because they're people-sized
yeah.
to break into the hotel.
I like Jack's reaction museum. To all that.
Yeah.
He's like, we're committing crime, guys.
Prime's like, well, yeah. Okay.
I don't want to, but dangerous weapon.
But, yeah. To kind of key off the other thing, you know, again, why don't they have a second contact other than Fowler to be like, yo, we need this thing, rather than let's hatch this elaborate plan that involves getting the kids into the museum, but then since you made it past the front door, there's not going to be any more alarms, you know, let alone every other heist movie has the pressure sensor that's on whatever you're stealing to get around. And then why don't the kids also have a phone call to call back to base?
Well, that
was Ratchet. Hook him up.
That was one thing I was wondering about, which was I didn't catch if there was a reason given why they couldn't ground bridge back out of the museum.
No, that's Prime was going to call Ratchet then.
Oh, okay.
Once they had it to send them back to base, and I was like, surely Miko with her cell phone that can get an awesome picture fresco.
Her cell phone
two
was
miles
up on
away.
The camera.
Well, yeah, but doesn't
it.
Jack and Raph have cell phones as well?
No, that's illegal.
No.
I mean, now Raph had one in the first episode when he was down playing with his little sports car that Bumblebee squished.
I'm sure that Raph was all like, hey, guys, you want to use my cell phone? And they were like, huh? Did someone say something? He's like, all right, I'll just keep pushing the ball. Don't worry about me.
Yeah. I'm going to pretend like I'm in the wind again.
Yeah, he just ran. He ran off to pretend like he had a cell phone.
Hey, guys, can I use my cell phone? He's like holding up his hands. Yeah. He's got the pinky and thumb by his ear and his mouth. What I'm kind of enjoying about the show is that when the kids get involved, it always seems like they go out of their way to make sure there's at least like a vaguely reasonable reason for them to be there. Like in this case, like we can't have Autobots just stomping into the museum. Can't have a dude just go like, dude, that's real heavy metal, you know. The kids are very legitimized in many of the appearances they make outside of the base, it seems.
which again I appreciate because it escapes that trope of we're going into battle in outer space, get a spacesuit for little Jimmy, you know.
Yeah.
Or in Bulkhead's case, even when he's like, okay, let's go to Greece, and he takes Miko along as part of a ploy to get her to actually work on her schoolwork.
Yeah.
Little did he know that Adam Baldwin would be chilling out, but it's cool. I wanted to briefly bring up some subtleties in the animation that I noticed. This is kind of a common thing that we're hitting now in these prime times, but I actually was specifically looking for two of them in this episode, and one of them was a big surprise. The first one I talked about already, Knockout's wheels had full-on physics, and they were moving with proper momentum based on his body movements. And I thought that was pretty damn awesome because they did not have to do that. His wheels could have easily been locked in place and it would have made sense.
Right.
Just in terms of like, surely when he's in robot mode, he just has the brakes on. But no, they left him freewheeling and they were moving properly the whole time. It was really cool. But this is the big one. And I felt all proud of myself when I saw this on my second viewing. And I'm not sure if maybe I was just slow and everyone saw this the first time. But when Miko says the teacher's coming, I just at a glance looked at Bulkhead's rearview mirror and you could see the teacher coming.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
You couldn't see her face, but she was standing there in that turquoise shirt approaching the car. She was looking around, then turning around and approaching the car. And I was like, of all the things you never had to animate, but damn awesome that you did, that's probably the best one of the whole episode. Was the teacher in the rearview mirror. That really took me by surprise. In fact, I'm just looking at it now, and yeah, the teacher actually walks out from, like, if you keep your eye on the rearview mirror the whole time, teacher walks into view in the rearview mirror just in time for when Miko looks at it, and then is looking around, looks at Bulkhead, starts approaching, Bulkhead takes off.
Hmm.
Like, damn. That was unnecessary, but doing it was plus 100 points to the animators. So again, you know, and of course there were also all kinds of great little bits of body language. I mean, just watch Knockout, just the yeah. Dude's posture, the way he acts. And again, watch the eyes. Everyone's eyes are doing so much acting as well. Marvelously animated show, in my opinion, for a weekly. Did anyone else see anything in the animation in particular this episode, good or bad?
I don't know. Unfortunately, I didn't get the chance to watch it in HD this time around. I'm still...
Oh, no!
Yeah. I downloaded it, but didn't get the chance to watch it since I don't have a good true HD solution right now.
Sigh. Guessing nobody else really saw anything in the animation that they felt stuck out too much?
No. I mean, like you said, a lot of good character moments and motions, but it definitely shows the progression from Beast Wars Beast Machines, you know, being 15-year-old TV shows, but
yeah, definitely. I was actually GOG after you'd mentioned, or I think it was last prime time, we talked a bit about the action sequences. I was actually trying to keep an eye on them in this episode, and I felt these ones, granted they weren't quite the same, but I actually got a really good vibe off of the action sequences in this episode. I wasn't sure if you'd felt the same or had kept an eye out for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did feel maybe a little less stiff, but this is the first one that I've only had a chance to watch once before we did the recording. So I didn't have a chance to watch it a second time, so I'm not as... I don't have as long a list of notes as I would have, because... But, yeah, I mean, going back, because that's something that did kind of stick out at me while I was watching it. It wasn't something that I looked for, like, oh, well, you know, I mentioned that the animation could be better. It was, there were some times where I'm like, oh, yeah, this could have been better, and that, it didn't hit me like that on this one, so
yeah.
That's saying something.
when I was looking at it, I think something that really helped is it felt like someone, whoever was animating Knockout in the action sequences was really getting into it. Because the dude had a very neat way of moving, and then like that scene where he and Breakdown are running to in the final fight scene when they're basically running to either side of Bulkhead, the way that he's running while spinning that cattle prod was almost anime in a very cool way, where he's like running with his head cocked at this really really good angle, spinning this thing behind him.
It looked fantastic. Again, this is a show where I tell people, like, please watch it in HD if you can. You see stuff. Aaron, you see stuff. Gog, do you have another thing you'd like to bring up?
They continue to be working in Miko's phone in different ways every episode.
It's a super phone. It's not just a smartphone. Even though it looks like a crappy flip phone.
Well, okay, and maybe this is an error in my logic or whatever. Maybe I'm not being as fair to Raf as I am with Miko, but just the fact that they're playing up her cell phone abilities as humorous while still completely being as unbelievable as Raph's hacking skills, the fact that it's done, in my opinion, for humorous reasons, whereas they really seem to be taking Raph's hacking a little way too seriously, I'm totally buying the fact that this phone can do all this stuff. Like, it's such a high resolution that, and that camera, which obviously probably has a fixed field of focus on whatever it's being aimed at to watch. Well, you could stick a phone in front of it, like a couple millimeters, and it focuses on it as if it's the room, and that would work on any type of technical level. I find that rather humorous, but the and then the fact that she took a picture from that far away with the cell phone of that mural, and they can zoom in and see all the detail.
Yeah.
It's 11 billion megapixel.
I thought it was even funnier that all the Transformers on either side just looked at that, like, mural picture of the orb and kind of went like, yep, Cybertronian. I was like, well, I mean, it can't look that good.
But I don't know. Like, again, maybe I'm just not being fair, and but either way, I find Miko's super phone to be kind of funny. And I'm definitely not holding it to the same level of fictional standard that I am Raph, but one is working for me and one isn't. But
yeah,
that's almost her bottomless fire extinguisher, because it is this magic thing that can do amazing things. Apparently, you know, the megapixel count is so high that Prime and all the Autobots can read, you know, copyright Cybertronian tech, you know, solar cycle 22 million.
Well, wasn't she, like, she even managed to do that in the five-parter with a monitor screen covered in Cybertronian symbols.
Yeah.
She's like, click! Don't worry, guys, I got it. And I was like, you got the right angle for that monitor? Like, are you sure you got it all? Okay, you got it all. Sweet. Omegas, have you got another point you'd like to bring up?
Let's see. The final fight scene of the episode. Maybe this is me. Maybe this is just me. Did anyone else get kind of a vibe of Dinobot's Last Stand from that scene?
Vaguely, in terms of him kind of like staggering forward to a degree, but it didn't feel quite as hopeless.
I'm thinking, I mean, three Decepticons and an uber powerful MacGuffin.
The layout was similar. The lighting was certainly similar. But I felt like since he didn't really, like, I don't think he really took any hits from Breakdown and Knockout, so that kind of relieved some of the tension for me. Because it wasn't like he'd been beaten up and then got hit with the death beam.
But right. Well, yeah, one thing that struck me like that, because, you know, in the beginning of this series, you know, we're used to these guys being able to take on, like, one Erraticon each, and now here's Bulkhead against three fully fledged Decepticons, and he's outwitting two of them who are supposed to be so good at working together, and taking this big death machine head on.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I'm probably grasping at things that aren't there. It just struck me, the progression that they're making with the fight scenes in this one.
Well, it's kind of like it is a little bit grasping at straws, but I mean, like, they are the right straws. They're from the right box. But I don't know. I think it's just because Dinobot's Last Stand had him just, like, it was against the odds, and the odds were kind of beating him down.
all the time. Like they weren't, he wasn't like losing the fight, but the odds he was up against, I think were, putting him in more danger than it seemed Bulkhead was in up until the Energon Harvester hit him. But then again, the Energon Harvester was pretty scary. So.
Yeah. Maybe that's just me. How much I took from that weapon. Just, I don't know, getting the Shang Tsung vibe out from Starscream in that one.
I actually thought Starscream's arm got ripped off in that scene. I had to rewatch the scene, and I was like, oh, no, wait, his arm just turned into a weapon mode.
Yeah.
All I saw was
big neon red blotches.
Because I was like, did his arm get ripped off? So I went back and actually slow-motioned a bit through the scene just to see if I missed anything. I was like, no, he let go of it. So I was like, okay, so that's just his gun arm thing. So I was like, I thought that whole scene got like twice as grisly for a second. Aaron, how about you? You got another bit you want to bring up?
Another good, I needed that out of Ratchet.
Yes!
It seems to be becoming a key phrase. Okay, Jeff, we need another couple. I needed that out of you. We've got like 8 coming up. We figure, you know, we get a few good ones in there. I am happy
to hear Jeffrey Combs say a line over and over again, but yeah. That's just me.
But no, that was in the Bulkhead so dumb, Bulkhead so smart, wait, still dumb, of trying to figure out where they were going to be and let's go for the set reuse. But then, you know, he says, oh, I'm so smart, I'm going to figure this out, and then he's really dumb and that he doesn't wait for everybody else to come back from where they are. So if they're going to be mining the Energon, they're going to be mining the Energon. Why not wait that extra 5 minutes? But
that harvester.
Yeah. That way you can't have the kind of, you know, like TJ was talking about, the fighting to the end, walk into the pain, you know, the same thing from X-Men 3. Was that the one with Wolverine going after Jean Grey or the Phoenix?
Really making an allusion to X-Men 3 here.
That was the scene that popped into my mind, that trudging forward into the pain to get to...
Speaking of Deus Ex Machina, Brett Ratner bitches.
Yeah. Full circle. Brett Ratner up in here. That was a whole chunk of fun, starting with the character out of Ratchet. And I'm glad that they still, you know, at least drop in a little bit of the other characters. They just don't go, oh, it's a Bulkhead show.
Yeah. That actually kind of leads to a point I was going to bring up, which is that I saw a lot of people, and you know, I feel for them, but I think that maybe they're looking at it in too small of a scope. But there are actually a lot of people who are starting to complain that, like, some characters are getting left behind. And you know, the point's been made that RC and Jack have not really had a duo episode together at any length since the premiere. But to me, I don't really mind that, because they've dominated the premiere so much. All the other characters really needed to have these episodes.
Yeah.
Even counting the miniseries, we're only 10 episodes in.
Exactly.
The season proper, only 5, where we're not... I mean, yeah, RC and Jack took up the entire mini to the point to where... At the end of it, we were like, well, Bulkhead looks kind of cool. We know nothing about him, and he barely got any speaking parts, but
yeah.
he seems to be cool. And now that they're giving him some characterization, people seem to be complaining about that. I mean, RC's a deep character, so when they go into her, I didn't mean it like that.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no. If you hadn't even said that, it wouldn't become something. Now it's, oh.
But it would have in the thread. When they start telling an RC story,
exploring her character.
Yes, when they explore
her all character.
Of RC's, yeah, when they explore all of RC's deep spots, stop. We're gonna. I hope they're.
What? Who's stop? Who?
Next. Next. Next.
Who is stopping? I don't understand.
I am. Someone go.
Okay. Well, where I was going with that is I think, because I see a lot of really heated debate about some things about Prime, where I kind of,
Like, I'm not going to go in the thread and start telling people, you stop debating that right now, you bunch of people with opinions. But, like, you know, like, this show, there's going to be at least 52 episodes of this show. So, I think that, like, there's a little bit of misplaced worry sometimes about characters that might not have been getting many lines so far. Because you got to remember, the premiere did happen. Even though I think the premiere was weaker than all the other episodes that have come since, it did happen. And the strongest parts of the premiere were very strong moments with Jack and RC many of times. So, you know, it's it will come back around. The circle will close eventually. Perhaps it will leave Raph behind. I don't know, but it will close eventually. And, you know, don't worry. Although there was also like a. This is a bit unrelated, but I also saw a really angry debate about Skyquake still, and I feel, you know, feel kind of bad being someone who is sort of holding out the candle that Skyquake is not entirely dead, and there are some people who are very angry at the notion that some of us think he's not entirely dead. You know, just waiting to see what happens. I just logically, you know, he's logically, I don't see why he's 100% dead, but if he is 100% dead, I certainly am not going to be mad because it makes sense still. But
Will you be okay with saying that he's just in, like, a Schrodinger's box right now?
Yeah. Well, they literally put him back into his Schrodinger's box. So, as far as we know, Skyquake is back in his box. If he ever comes back out of his box, it'll make sense to me. If he never shows up again, then he's in his box.
Yeah, but you took him out of the box. It ruins the value.
Ah, man. Also going through our TFW Transformers Prime forum, I'm really happy to see a thread that says, anyone hating Miko ellipses less? So, yeah, a lot more people starting to warm up. Does anyone else have any talking points they want to bring up?
I don't know. I did find another, Ratchet character bit of how he hates talking to machines.
That made me chuckle.
That was a good line.
Because I actually did notice, like, a 2, 3, 4 after he said that for the, you know, the laughter weight. But, I don't know.
There's a little bit of Ratchet characterization throughout the episode that I found. Because, you know, when you see him building the decoy orb, and all he really has to do is make a big, heavy gold ball, but it's got really intricate circuits and layers of, you know, outer shells to it.
Yeah, because anything worth doing is worth doing right.
It stems, I think, a bit from when he was doing all the science fair projects, where he's like, no, you've got to do it properly. And so he's like, he's got this bit of a perfectionist streak to him.
Well,
it's like,
that's even weirder because, okay, if he's taking the time to do that, it, at least in my mind, what he's doing is he wants it to appear to be the original in every way, but if that is something from ancient Greece that they uncovered, do you think that they would put it on display without actually x-raying it or something, or trying to figure out what it is? Or that's kind of weird that thing's on display and no one noticed. You can explain it away, I guess, by saying that it has some sort of casing around it that makes it appear to be nothing more than a spherical ball from the outside. But if that's the case, that would still show up as weird, the fact that they can't see through it through any type of scanning equipment, and then they would further try to drill into it and see what it was. And at the very least, if they couldn't, it would be in a lab where it was being studied versus just... I don't know. Again, it's a cartoon, I know, but that when if he's taking the time to build a replica that can't be distinguished, that means someone would have to take the time to look at it that closely to, and he's worried that that would happen. And if that's the case, why does that not seem weird to anyone else that there's this weird ball of circuitry from ancient Greece? I don't know.
Also, I took it as it's got to be a replica. The original one, right, if you knew how to use it, would open up and suck in energon. So this one will open up if you try to use it. But it's like, only the Decepticons know that it opens up, and they have the real one. So this is legitimately accomplishing nothing. But keep going, man. She's like, I got to do it right. Anyone else have anything that they'd like to bring up?
See, I've got two other notes here of any real interest. If you actually search, for anyone wondering, searching Greek God and Golden Orb will get you a summary of a Simpsons episode.
I found a lot of spider pictures when I
found a bunch
that.
Of tattoos.
I found a bunch of, I can't talk about that on this program.
You were searching wrong.
No.
This is why you're not Wrath.
Greek God balls. That's what I'm searching for.
Yeah, we'll have to sit you down after the show. Yeah, the other note I have here is Bulkhead is whipped. Yeah, because, you know, it's like, okay, the principal's coming, and, you know, he could just sit there. I mean, granted, it'll add, like, breaking into a car to her detention list, but, yeah, you know, he could have just sat there and let her get dragged back.
He was disagreeing with what she was doing, but when she's like, no, just drive, he's like, okay, and then started nagging her on the way.
Yeah.
And I love how when, Miko has gotten caught by the rent-a-cop, Decepticons have the Harvester. His first thought is, we gotta get it back so I can get Miko out! It's like, okay, we're building a decoy, so I can get Miko out, right? And by the time Ratchet says,
don't leave anybody behind.
I love it because, like, when Ratchet has to remind him, what, so they can steal the Harvester again, and there's this moment of, ah!
I like that the pause was so long on that, too. He's like, I'm so stupid! I actually had one other thing I wanted to bring up, which was and this actually tricked me, when the kids thought RC was coming, and it's like, no, Soundwave just happens to have very feminine legs.
Yeah.
And I was like, I thought that was RC, even though I knew it wasn't, but I was like, oh, that's RC, but it can't be, but oh my god, that worked! I love that. Yeah. I almost want to think it was intentional that Soundwave just, like, purposefully was moving twice as lithe as usual. And I also love the implication that he just silently opened the door and looked at them, and then just, like, reached out and took the orb and left. Like, like, I like that the commercial cut just had him already flying in the air, as though the kids just did nothing, as he was like, eh, give me that. Alright, bye. Like, I was waiting for him to take another picture of them, but, I guess my creep quotient couldn't be fully satisfied.
Well, apparently he gets the internet.
Well, he probably gets a lot of stuff.
He's got that Google app
in his face.
Yeah.
I swear I had one more, but I can't remember what it was anymore. It's while you were talking about Bulkhead.
How about the fact that it seems like Prime's weak spot is his head?
You know,
last week he got hit with a tree or whatever and down for the count. This week he gets hit.
To be fair, I think anyone's weak spot is their head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I'm going to get a cattle prod to the throat or a tree to the head, I think anyone would go down from that.
Yeah, pretty sure.
It's
not like it's movie Blackout where it's like, no, just shoot him in the crotch. That's where his spark chamber is.
Yeah. it's not a video game boss with a big red light blinking on his shoulder you have to shoot at.
Well, it'd be really funny if they did give Prime, like, a weak spot in a really strange place that everyone kept hitting. It's like, no, my kidney!
My titanium spleen!
right in the skid plate.
Curses, how did you know, other than the blinking light?
I kind of appreciate, like, I mean, I hope it doesn't get quite to, I love Justice League, but Justice League kind of, one of the bigger things people tended to snark about on Justice League was that often they'd find a way to render Superman kind of useless for the sake of not having him fix everything. But I do appreciate that Optimus Prime is definitely not, like, invincible in the show, even though, you know, he does seem to become the immediate target quite often, which is tactically sound. But poor dude, you see, he's smacked up, you know, and a cattle prod to the throat is no good. But now I think I'm out of stuff on this episode. I know I had another one, but it's gone right out of my head, which is annoying.
Anyone else have anything?
One final note.
Who?
Where are these parents?
Off screen.
I mean, I can understand, you not know, rendered, nobody likes Raph.
Oh,
there's that. But, and then Miko does her whole thing that, you know, she's with her American parents and they don't think anything. But Jack seemed like his mom cared.
Oh, yeah. I forgot we did see Jack's mom. We haven't seen her at all yet. So she'll pop up when we get the Jack and RC-centric episode, which will be soon, I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was just sitting there going, okay, wait a second. This was a weekday because Miko had detention, which, I mean, does that surprise anybody? But, you know, why? Are they all, like, saying, oh, no, I'm over at Miko's house? Or, you know, what's going on here?
Yeah, they're all...
His mom probably thinks he has a girlfriend or something, and he's happy. I mean, he got his motorcycle, so it would make sense he's out driving around. And they're out in the middle of nowhere, true. Like a desert mountain town, so let's drive around and work on motorcycles and stuff. But that is an interesting point, that there's a lot of stuff that was set up in the pilot that hasn't come back yet. And that's I'm kind of happy about that, because it could easily have just picked right off the bat where it's like, okay, well, Jack's having problems with his mom, and Megatron has dark energon zombies. And instead, it seems like with every episode, they're going in a little bit of a different direction, and that stuff is still there, ready to be called upon when they need it. So that's a good point, though. I mean, I didn't think about that, like with his mom and stuff. And then there's the whole thing where apparently during the weekdays, RC is with Jack or parked in his garage. So I have a feeling that we'll see more of that stuff later. But yeah, I'm a little surprised that we haven't seen more of Jack's mom, because they're obviously not showing a lot of people because they don't have them rendered or designed. And with Jack's mom, that's not the case. She was designed from the beginning, and we haven't seen her at all yet. So.
She had a speaking role, even.
Yeah. And hers, wasn't her voice actress the one from Night Court? What was her name?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Markie Post?
Yes,
yeah, Markie Post. That was Jack's mom, right?
Yeah.
So,
I think so.
I don't know. Interesting.
Hey, Raph, where's your mom? Oh, I think my mom's like, your mom's not rendered. Oh.
Yeah, she got to go to Antarctica.
I want to have real parents one day.
My parents aren't rendered yet. That's creepy. And anyone else have anything they want to bring up? No.
No. Seems not.
All right. Well, we mean
no.
We've hit our usual length. These are nicely discussable episodes. Although, you know, I am kind of happy I'm going to get a little bit of a break from taking them in weekly. It'll freshen it up again. Like, I don't mind hiatuses when they're only like 2 or 3 weeks long, because then it's kind of like, all right, you know, something else to do on Friday nights. Like,
not the artificial season break.
Yeah, I hate the artificial season break where it's like, hey, guess what?
Let's take 4 months off.
Yeah, because
we'll call it a mid-season break.
Yeah, but if I had the choice between a 4 month break or like a couple 3 week breaks, I think a couple 3 week breaks would be my preference. Only because that also kind of syncs up nicely with the idea that what if, you know, they're not watching one of our other shows because they're busy getting caught up on our show that's running weekly or something like that. I'm sure that's actually entirely not in the agenda of any cable company, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, but we were talking about this a little before the show, but G.I. Joe and G.I. Joe Renegades and Transformers Prime debuted the same time on Black Friday, or right there, very close within the same week. And Renegades has, as far as I know, has gone straight without a break until about 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, whereas Prime didn't start back up until, what was it, February?
Yeah.
So Renegades just came back from its break this week. And then Prime goes on a 3 week break starting next week. So,
if they're taking...
and they're side by side in time slots as well. So that kind of helps keep that time slot being viewed. It's interesting.
I mean, if they're taking into account, you know, and I think cable companies should take into account the nature of PVRs and people who don't want to operate on the cable company schedule. Then that's also a good way to maintain wider viewership, because I mean, like, just speaking for myself, there's a lot of shows I want to watch. The weekly Transformers Prime is preventing me from watching another show weekly, and I have a bunch of shows I'd love to get caught up on. So having 3 weeks of no Transformers Prime, that's three weeks for me to get caught up on other shows like Renegades, which I haven't even started watching, or, you know, going outside of the network, Avengers, which everyone should be watching because it's really good, and as far as I know, it's not getting enough credit. But I don't mind the break too much. It'll let me check out some other stuff. But for now, that is prime time. We'll be back, I guess, in 3 weeks or so for Speed Metal. I was just reading the synopsis for that. I think that might be a Jack episode, now that I'm thinking about it.
Good. He needs one.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a... Although, slight downside, it's a Jack Bumblebee episode, it looks like. Poor RC.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, just reading some of the synopses from episodes, I think if I was going straight off that, I would have expected to be disappointed in some of the ones that
the scrappy one sentence is completely...
Yeah. Some of the ones that I've been least excited by have been some of my favorite episodes so far, so...
Yeah.
I'm just waiting to see.
Yeah, though, looking at that summary, I can assume it probably might still be a Jack and RC episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not as direct as, you know...
Oh, man, there's going to be an episode called Sick Mind... That plus this show has me so excited. Oh, man. Until then, this has been Vangelis. That's been Gog Dog, Omegas, and Aaron. And Prime Time will return in April. But until then, Prime out!
It means, but you got some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.